would you do if someone handed you an internship based on a skill that you didn't actually have yet? If you're Fonz Van Damme, you panic, buy an actual physical book, speed run Drupal in 3 months, and spend the next 15 years turning that energy into building a better Drupal ecosystem. Fonz is a long-term Drupal community member and contributor and the founder of Webhaven, which is basically the culmination of everything he's learned across a decade plus of agency life, distilled into a starter kit that gets you from zero to site launch in the least amount of headache. In this episode, we talk about what it looks like to build something alone in 2026, and specifically how AI played a role in making Webhaven a reality. I appreciated his take on this because Fonz had to figure out early how to make LLMs stop flattering him and start being ruthlessly honest. We also talk about the moment Drupal is having right now, and why Fonz is hopeful that now is the perfect time for a resurgence. Without further ado, Fonz Van Damme. Welcome, Fonz, to Community in Code. Tell us about yourself and what you've been working on.
Hello, thanks for having me. So my name is Fonz, and I've been a Drupal enthusiast for around 15 years. I've been working on and with Drupal for all those years. And at the moment, I'm working on a project to speed up Drupal development, and it's called Webhaven.
What, so 15 years, what version of Drupal was that?
I started when Drupal 6 was still a thing.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I know some ex-colleagues of mine and people that were in when Drupal 5 was still a thing, but 6 is really old.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was thinking back because I know that, you know, there's the kind of running gag of Drupal 7 forever, right? And that's not that far off from about 15 years. So I would have guessed about Drupal 6. Yeah. What drew you to Drupal?
So Drupal was made by a Belgian, Dries Buitaert. So I heard about it back in the days when I was still in school and I had an assignment on Drupal. And then I had the opportunity to do an internship and they were looking for someone who knew a bit of Drupal, and I didn't know anything about Drupal yet. But anyway, I applied for the internship and then all of a sudden they said, okay, you can do it. And then I panicked because I had only 3 months until the internship started. And then I started to learn Drupal like a madman. But there wasn't a lot of stuff out there. You still had to learn it by buying a book. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine now, but that's how I rolled into it.
Yeah,
faking.
if you need to learn Drupal now, I think you ask ChatGPT.
Yes, I think so too. we have a lot of video content on Drupal now.
Yeah.
Back in the days, there wasn't, Lullabot was already a thing, but no, it was really hard to get into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
go ahead.
And yeah, I fell in love with the possibilities that Drupal gave me, the power. It's really a powerful tool. And once you master it, your imagination becomes the limit, I think, and yeah, still using it daily. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
what talk about your sort of intro to just technology in general. Like you're going to school. Would you go to school for computer science or some degree?
Yeah, but when I was a young kid, I didn't like school that much. But my dad is a doctor, and he was always very computer minded, and that's a bit of a weird mix for a doctor. Yeah. So he also liked a Mac. So we had one of those first Macintosh classics at home, and I have a picture of it. I can send it to you after the show. And my it was a portable Mac, so my dad took it when we went on a vacation. Nice. And I think that's where it started. And then when I was around 12 years old, I played video games and we had a clan. We were on clan base and we started to make websites for our clan, PHP, Dreamweaver, even mm-hmm. Flash. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where it really started. I made my first scripts, a guest book, how fast your page loaded and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it for, to me, it always was amazing to we put together our own computers back in the days and buy components online or in shops. And we made our own website for the clan and yeah, the sheerless possibilities. I haven't felt that with anything else, not even with building real stuff.
Now I know you've mentioned in other interviews and podcasts and things that you still sort of like poke around at other CMSs just to make sure that Drupal is still sort of the right thing. Talk about that process, just what you do, how you do that, and sort of like what you have discovered by like playing with other stuff.
Yeah, I've always had the fear that I've invested so much time into Drupal that I was a bit of locked in because of that, and that it would be hard to switch to something else, or that I would stay with Drupal because of that. So I've always been interested in other technologies, and when there's something new, I just set it up locally, and then I start to dig around in it, see how it works. And it's also good because I see what other projects are doing. Mm-hmm. A lot of projects are better in some stuff and worse in other stuff, and then I try to take that back to Drupal. So I don't want to be the guy that says that Drupal is perfect for everything. And I also like to work. So I have a few modules on Drupal.org. So I also want to contribute to Drupal. And yeah, that's why I'm always very curious how other projects manage stuff. For example, the edited experience. Drupal hasn't always been the best in the edited experience. And for example, that's something I was very curious about in other CMSs, for example, WordPress with Gutenberg, mm-hmm. With the other builders. I think it's interesting. So I don't want to be the person that only looks at Drupal and mm-hmm. doesn't know anything about anything else. And if a friend or a client would ask me if something is a fit for Drupal and it isn't, that I can also say no, but I would look at if I were you. Mm-hmm. That's really important to me.
What have you found in that process? Are there some other CMSs that are really good at like this type of thing, or anything that would like that you're interested in? And would be interested enough that it would maybe lure you away to like do to play around in something else other than Drupal?
Yeah, mostly editor experience I looked into a lot, like I said, and okay. I think WordPress was always better at it. And I've done projects in WordPress, but then I missed some core functionalities that were in Drupal. So mm-hmm. I always was on the fence about that. I think now, really recently, Drupal Canvas came out for Drupal, and I've been working really hard on that now. And for me, it's the missing piece of the puzzle for Drupal. And it's everything I think the Drupal community missed in editor experience. It feels to me like we solved that now. That's really interesting. But I also looked a lot at headless solutions. The more closed frameworks. But mm-hmm. in my heart, I'm really an open source person. So I always find it hard to, if someone asks me what should we build this in, to advise something that's closed, because I don't know what's going to happen with the project in the future. And if the code base is not yours, it can be that the solution that I'm proposing then is not a durable solution for them. And then 2 years later, the project stops and they have to migrate everything to another solution. And I don't like that. So I mainly look at open source solutions.
Is that the thing that keeps bringing you back to open source, is the community around the technology that's being built?
Yeah, the people, but also the ability to really dig in the code and to understand what's happening. I tend to be curious, and I like to dig in how stuff works. For example, I look in how Symfony works. Drupal uses a lot of Symfony.
Yep.
And then I'm so for example, Drupal adopted the routing of Symfony, and you can just start using it, but then it feels a bit like a black box because you don't know what happens behind the scenes. And I'm the person who starts digging into the code to really understand it. More an helicopter view, but I like to know what happens behind scenes. And I, for example, I also look to Laravel. I did a lot of work in Code Igniter in the past, so more the MVP frameworks, Cake PHP, stuff like that. So a lot of open source stuff.
And Drupal is in sort of a period of change, and obviously, like, if you look at the installation, the total installations across all Drupal sites, the number hasn't grown in a while. But I think a lot of people, and we've had some folks from the Drupal community on the podcast before, but a lot of people believe that right now is like the time for it to maybe make a resurgence. What is your take on both sort of the trajectory of Drupal, like, up to now, and also like what its future is looking like?
Yeah. So what I have observed from my personal view, from starting with Drupal 6, I think Drupal 7 really was the surge in users. And if you would look at Google Trends, it does lie. Since then, it went downwards. I think the main reason is Drupal got really complex, and it moved more to enterprise and bigger projects. And it's really hard to do small websites in Drupal, or it was hard. Mm-hmm. And that's also, so yeah, it was harder to jump into Drupal for the smaller projects. Then WordPress would be easier. And it's also one of the reasons why I started to work on Webhaven, because I felt like I want to bring the power of Drupal back to the little projects and to more people, because I really believe in Drupal and how good it is. And you know, that's also the reason why I made it. But I think mainly because it shifted more to enterprise and big projects. And I think personally now, with everything that's going on in the community and in Drupal, there's a big chance that we can pull it back. And I'll try to be one of the people that helps to do that with Webhaven, but also with my work on Drupal in general.
Yeah. Let's get into that a little bit. Talk about what is Webhaven, and what led you to found this new company?
Yeah, so Webhaven to me is like the ultimate Drupal site starter. So the name says it. You can really spin up a project in Drupal really fast, and it's like a blueprint. So it holds everything that I've done seen in the last 15 years. So to me, it's more like the Olympic minimum. What do you really need to have a quality Drupal site from day one? And then people can take that as a starter and do their own thing with it. Where does it come from? Yeah, the idea has always been in the back of my mind. And it felt like it was something that I had to get out of my system. I've been working really long on Drupal, and I also had the feeling if a good friend would come to me and say, Fons, can you please make this in Drupal, that I didn't have the tool to say yes, I'll come to your house tomorrow and let's go, we're going to make it together. And now I do. And I also felt like I had a lot of stuff in my mind, but not in a project. So I wanted to make it tangible. And that's where it came from. And then also, like I said, Drupal was moving to the big projects, and to pull it back and make it viable for small projects. And I think that's now something that is able with Webhaven. And also a lot of people say Drupal is hard to learn, and that's also something that I want to work on with Webhaven to make the barrier lower also for newcomers and learners to have a good starting point and to start right away with a project, and that they know they start from best practices, but also for Drupal experts or, for example, agencies that are now doing WordPress but are curious about Drupal, for example.
Is Webhaven something like a project that you would, like a premium sort of thing where you would go to the website and down like pay whatever amount and then download the package, or is it purely open source, or what's sort of like your like sort of business model around it?
Yeah, I'd love to offer it indeed as a premium package that you can pay and download it. And it has a visual installer. You have a lot of options because it consists of recipes. So it's like a menu card, and you can select what you want. It sets it up and you can go from it right away. And then developers or people who want to learn Drupal can put in their own stuff. But it has a lot of stuff from the go.
And as I understand it, you've sort of built it from like years of experience in sort of like agency work and like solving the same sort of problems over and over. Talk about like the thought and care that, and like, you know, how you approached like architecting it from that sort of perspective of like, these are just like the 5 or 10 things that we have to do every single time.
Yeah, so when I've worked in a Drupal agency for 10 years. So I started as a Drupal developer and then more moved to Scrum Master and Team Lead. But the company was struggling, and we always had a hard time to find someone to do the commercial side, so the sales side. Mm-hmm. And I also was helping to find the right fit for that role. But we didn't really find the right person, or it never clicked. And I was so fed up with that process and to see how the company was slipping away, and that I started to do the sales. I didn't know anything about sales, so I had to learn everything by doing it. And that's when I learned what was important for clients, because I was talking to them all the time. Mm-hmm. And I also always thought sales was really boring. But then I also realized that sales could be a creative process. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do it my way. The way that I did it wasn't scalable at all. So that was a huge problem, because I had a unique way of doing it, but it worked really well for us. And that's really where I learned what needed to be in the projects, because back in the days, I also did the analysis because I didn't only want to do the sales. So I also did a lot of analysis and wireframing. So I had a lot of hats, but that was a really nice period for me to figure out all that stuff. And Webhaven really is all those hats in one platform. I always wanted to make it together with my colleagues back then, but it was always hard to get everyone on the same page, or I wasn't good enough in explaining my vision. And that's also where the rise of the LLMs really helped, because I had it all in my head, but I was doing sales, analysis, wireframing, and I wasn't coding daily anymore, only in the weekends or after hours, because I always liked Drupal. So I didn't want to be the sales guy that didn't know anything about the product. So I kept really active in that. And with the rise of the LLMs, all of a sudden I was like, okay, the barrier for me to get back in the building game lowered. Fons, you have no excuses anymore. Now you have to just go for it. Mm-hmm. And it's also a bit scary because there are no excuses left. So I just have to do it now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's where we are right now. So I have a demo environment and stuff like that. I'm finishing up on Webhaven, and then we can start selling it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that my experience using ChatGPT and Claude and other things is pretty good at is especially if you have a whole bunch of things in your head and you're just like, I'm just going to dump, like, I'm going to brain dump in this chat box, right? It's like, were you also sort of using it to kind of synthesize those ideas a little bit and basically help you say, okay, this is the approach that you should go. This is how we combine all those disparate ideas.
I've went to different phases. In the first phase, I made a mind map of stuff and I chat. If I would ask a colleague or a friend, it's hard to get them to be ruthlessly honest. Mm-hmm. And LLM has no problem with that. So the first phase was my brainstorming phase and have an LLM bash on it and also strip away stuff, because in that phase I had a lot of shiny object syndrome. So I really had to get to the basics. And then also in the building, it really helped out a lot in architecture and stuff that I would normally ask a colleague, but I wouldn't be sure if they gave me the ruthless answers that I needed, and an LLM lowered that barrier. That doesn't mean I didn't ask people, but I first went to the LLM and then showed people or asked people that I knew would help. So yeah, it really speed up the process for me.
It's interesting that your first response to that was how LLMs can be like, don't have the sort of like polite factor, particularly because like I feel like I have to constantly fight with ChatGPT and other things to get it to be a little bit more objective, a little bit more ruthless, in your words, to be like, no, actually tell me like what you act like, the objective response to this, as opposed mm-hmm. to like making it pretty and like stroking my ego. Have you like gone through and like put in specific instructions to kind of like tune it in that way, so it's a little bit more like blunt?
Yeah, by default, what it gave back to me was useless, because everything just went with the flow and good idea. And that's also when I started reading about it and how to prompt and first to put the LLM in a role. For example, you are a lead and you are very biased. You don't want to go with this solution. So you have to make a lot of context and put it in a situation where it will object a lot, and then let it bash on what you're proposing. And I also think my sales experience helped with this, because I experienced a lot of objections. But it's really important. I think most of the work and the prompting went into getting it into that state and not the prompt itself. But it's worth it to learn that. By doing it, there's no magic formula for this. it's really learning by doing, I'm afraid. I don't have silver bullets for this.
Sorry. No, but I think that's a really good, I think that's a really good insight, because I think that it's very tempting, because the interface that most of these LLMs use is just a chat box, right? It's tempting to treat it like just a conversation, you know, like I'm talking to you, right? I'm not going to go to you and say, you're a developer and this is all of the things that you think. And like, you know, like I'm not going to do that, because you are a human being and you have an experience. And like, that's the whole, like, that's the right. But like, the LLMs don't have that, right? So like, I think it's a valid point to take the time to set up the stage. And I know it can be a lot of work to even like come up with like what you want that to be, because anything is sort of possible. So I think that's a really valid point to like sort of spend a decent enough time on that part to get the better results.
Yeah, if I can add to that, I think it also comes back when I told you on Symfony that I like to dig in how stuff works.
Right.
I had the same reaction with an LLM. How does it work? How can you improve? And there's a lot of out there how you can improve your prompting. And that was something that I learned fast, and that helped me a lot. And to understand, okay, how does this work? How can I stage it into a role? How can I make sure I get what I want out of it? Because otherwise they just say, oh, great idea, Fons, go for it. Or just add this or that. But that's not what I wanted. I wanted to be brutally honest and really be harsh on my ideas, challenge them more than a human would do. And it works really well for that.
Yeah.
And it also hurts a bit when you do it well. And then you know that it works well. If an LLM is like, oh, good idea, I'm also like, oh, this is not good.
right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Whenever I get a response that says that's a great idea, I'm always suspicious.
That's a good reflex to have.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using ChatGPT basically since it became public, and just watching it change over time and using it for different types of things. And I like my experience with it has been through using it for like non sort of like. I do a lot of, I play Dungeons & Dragons, I run Dungeons & Dragons games. I was at the time when I first started starting to like read like H.P. Lovecraft stories, one of the first tests that I gave it was write an H.P. Lovecraft story in the style, write a romance story in the style of H.P. Lovecraft, with the idea being H.P. Lovecraft has never and would never have written a romance story. So what is it going to do with this challenge, right? Like, how is it going to approach these two disparate ideas? And then I use that as a sort of a metric. Every once in a while, a new release comes out and I'll be like, okay, what is this version doing? How has things changed? And then a friend of mine gave me the idea of like running it through, there are like online, like language tests, where you can like put a teachers sort of use it, so you can like, it gives you like a score on like reading level and comprehension and that sort of like what sort of age group or what sort of like, you know, academic level does this correspond to. So I would like, again, sort of like get the metric of like putting Lovecraft into that to see what he actually wrote in, and then compare that with what the AIs can do. And see like how things have changed over time. And so you can learn a lot by like playing with it and doing these different sorts of things. But I think that a lot of the sort of deeper technical stuff that has come out of it is like, yeah, you really need to like, if you want something beyond just great idea, you're amazing, you really need to like create that sort of baseline for it.
Yeah, totally. You have to really dig in how it works and experiment with it. You have to embrace it, which isn't always easy.
Then
you go to the change topic, or how people embrace change, which isn't always easy to do.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like in order to really, like, I feel like I need to know a lot about how it works, and I need to know a lot about how it works by using it to be able to be critical of it as a technology, as like, where is it going in the future, the things that it's affecting now and the things that it might be affecting, you know, 10 years from now. Because if you, because without like actually using it, you just are like basing your information on things that people have told you. But like, there's a lot of like, there's so much hype about like, it's going to change everything. It's going to cure cancer. It's going to do whatever. And then on the other hand, there's like, yeah, X is using it for porn. Like, you know, like there's just like this broad spectrum of like, you know, what we're being told it can be used for versus, yeah, what it's actually being used for.
It's something that I have really mixed emotions about, because sometimes I, the more I use it, the more I think that, okay, maybe we even under hype how big of a change this can be. But that's when I dig into domains, for example, the coding one. In the last couple of weeks and months, it's insane the change that I've seen personally. But I'm on the fence about it a lot. Sometimes I'm like, okay, it's totally overhyped. Then some days I'm like, oh, this is insane. I think people are underestimating how crazy it is. But it has so many domains that AI is touching. So it's hard to grasp sometimes. So I think change management, it's something that I don't read a lot about or don't see a lot of articles about now. But change management in companies is probably one of the most important things to read about or to get skilled in, because it's everywhere now. And how to get a team to embrace the change, how to deal with fear or the FOMO. A lot of FOMO in the market, and you know, when people react on emotions, mostly they don't take the best, they don't make the best decisions. So yeah, it's really I'm really baffled about the speed of only the domain that I have expertise in, how fast it goes. So it's hard to grasp how it's changing the world.
Yeah. We'll swing back to that in a bit, because I want to talk about how AI and Drupal intersect. But I want to go back to Webhaven for a second. A few months ago, we had Mike Herschel on, probably less than a few months ago, who created Dripyard, which is a theme development shop for Drupal.
Yeah.
How is Webhaven, like, what is Webhaven, how is Webhaven different than what Mike is doing?
Yeah, I've seen their work and I really love it. I think there have to be multiple solutions in the Drupal world, and that's also a good thing. For me, Webhaven more is like a total package. So it has an installer, it has recipes with features, and it also comes with a team, a base team. If you go to the webhaven.io website now, you see it in action. So it's more than a team. So I see it as a full package. It's something that I've also been thinking about a lot. Isn't it too much for me as one person to do it from installer to end product? But I like challenges, so I was like, and I had it in my mind, and I said, no excuses, you have you can do this, you have to go for it. But it could be totally possible in the future that there also is an installation of Webhaven without a team, and that it, for example, also works together with a Dripyard team.
Right.
I'm open to work together with other people. For me, the main goal is to get Drupal back to the small projects and also show more people the power of Drupal, more organizations, because it's really powerful technology. And I want more people to benefit from it.
What sort of options are part of the installation process? Like, I know that when you're installing Drupal CMS, it gives you like, hey, are you going to do this type of content, that type of content? Is that sort of the workflow that you're working with as well?
Yeah, it's the same vibe, just other nuances. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, Drupal CMS is more like a showcase of what Drupal can do. Mm. And to me, I was already working on Webhaven when I've dug into it. But to me, it felt a bit too bloated. So I kept it more, I stripped. It's more stripped what Webhaven is. To me, it's really the Olympic minimum, the essentials, and you can build on top of it. Mm-hmm. But now I have the baseline. So of course I have a lot of more stuff in my head to do with it. So now you have recipes, basic recipes on form building, SEO, landing pages, normal pages, then optional is a blog, events, a showcase where you can make success stories, you can add your projects, you can add customer stories. But of course, I want to go beyond that. And I would also love to have, for example, a recipe that I'm working on now brings AI into the mix, where the AI helps you in content structure.
Okay.
I don't want it to just generate slop, but in my personal experience, when somebody or something helps you with a good structure and you start working on that, it really boosts your workflow and also the vibe that you have. Yeah, it really boosts that. So that's something that I want to get into that. But yeah, it's not the goal to let it generate blog posts in 10 seconds without any human supervising it. So yeah, content quality will be a thing. But also on the developer side, and it's something that I'm experimenting a lot with. So for example, now I have Webhaven and it has this base, and I try to document everything with AI, so every agent that would dig into the project would know what it is, how it works. And in the beginning, it was really hard because I was making a lot of components, but there was no reference for the AI to look at. So most of them I made with AI, but I had to do a lot of manual thinking, and now there are a lot of components and it's really easy for me to tell the AI here are 30 components, look at those, and we're going to make this now, and it has this reference or this mm-hmm. library of components. And now I see that it speeds up my development already, and I also want it for others, and all the components that exist now have the best practices, and I try to put the instructions in there for the AI to help people make stuff, and so they can invest their time in the cool stuff and not the boring stuff that you have to do on every project. Mm-hmm.
Who's the audience for Webhaven? Is it individual, like I have my own business and I want to set up a Drupal site? Is it for agencies? Is it like a little bit of column A, a little column B?
Yeah, it's something that I want to keep open now. So I'd love to have Drupal newcomers and learners, people who say Drupal, super interesting, but I heard it has a high barrier. How can I get into it? Then, to me personally, the best way is learning by doing. With Webhaven, you can set up your project really fast. Once version one is live, I also want to invest more time in video content. So I would want, the dream is to make a Webhaven Academy where I also make content for the different roles. So for newcomers and learners, For example, I don't want to make long courses, so snackable content. For example, together we'll make your portfolio website and we'll have it up together. And we're not going to make 1,000 websites that look the same. You'll also be able to add in your own vibe, but we can go through it together. Mm-hmm. But I also want it for seasoned Drupal experts that already use Drupal. Because if we jump back to what we talked about earlier, a lot of change in the Drupal community now, a lot of new projects. Everyone is already using all that new stuff. So I dug in all of it, and sometimes it was overwhelming, but Webhaven uses all the new stuff. So also for existing Drupal experts, it's an easier way to level up and to make projects faster. And also, again, it's not my plan, so they don't have to do anything anymore. But for example, they have 30 hours to work on a project. Spend those 30 hours on what will make the difference for this project. Don't spend it to get it to work. It will work in the first 2 hours, and use the other time to higher the bar.
Yeah.
So your projects will be better then. And I hope people will also enjoy what they are doing more. And then also for agencies, of course. But it's hard to imagine how that will work. But for example, if an agency wants to get into Drupal, learning all that stuff, it's a high risk. So also with Webhaven, I want to lower that risk. I don't know if that will be enough. So if an agency would be like, okay, Fons, you have Webhaven, but we also want to hire you for consulting and to get us going. Mm-hmm. I'm also open for that. I don't know if agencies would like that. And again, on those experiences, I could maybe make new video content, but I see it as a product. But in the beginning, if people want me to work on it, we can talk about it. And I would take all those learnings and invest them back in the product and grow from there.
Yeah. Let's sort of close on Drupal. There's been a lot of work with the recent versions of Drupal and the ongoing sort of AI project. And you mentioned AI in Drupal a little bit ago. What are your thoughts about how Drupal is integrating AI into the sort of project as a whole? Like, what are the things that you see as things that are like good things for it to explore? What things should it sort of avoid? That sort of thing.
I think Drupal, to me, it looks like it's one of the front runners in the open source space and the AI adoption. So that's really nice to see. There's a lot of energy around AI. It's a hot topic. So that's really nice. It's going in all different ways. And I'm not the person to say we have to contain it. I think it's a good time to just see where it goes now. And then on the different domains, there's enough people looking at it to see where we can get it. What I want to avoid is to have it to become a slop factories. So for example, for Webhaven, I'm already looking at a solution. If you would generate pages with AI, to have an indicator that it says to grade the content, for example, this is pure slop. And then if people start working on it, that they see that they are improving it, to maybe add gamification. So I don't want it to replace the creativity of people. For example, content people, marketeers, they have to use the tools, they have to get an Olympic minimum and do their thing with it, and it has to be enjoyable. And to me, it would be a bad thing if that would all disappear and it would be all automatically generated, because the quality probably won't be as good. So that's something that I'm thinking a lot about.
A lot of people talk about Drupal specifically, like the reason, or propose the reason why it's sort of leading this sort of AI development integration thing. And I know Dries has definitely said this, is because sort of like the way Drupal was built fundamentally supports the way that AI approaches things and looks at things. Can you like speak on that a little bit, or is that something that you also see?
It's an article that I read and that I thought about a lot, and it's true, but I think it's totally by accident that it's this way.
Yeah.
So was there skill involved in getting into this position? Yeah, of course, skilled people made Drupal, but it's also luck, I think. But what you say is true. The recipes are there, and that's also, I was on a point, I left the agency where I worked, the Drupal agency, should I stay in the Drupal community? Is it time for something new? Is Drupal gonna die? And I was like, the more that I read about it and I stepped away from it, looked to it, and then I was like, okay, but there's a huge opportunity now, and if this works, the story maybe only starts now.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I have my sort of hot take. I've been thinking about this a lot because I come from a WordPress background, and I've been thinking a lot about like the personalities of the founders of these two projects, right? And like and the backgrounds of them, and how that impacts the way that the projects have been built sort of fundamentally over time. And Dries comes from a computer science background. Like he did a dissertation in JavaScript, or Java, not JavaScript, Java. Like he obviously approaches things from a very analytical computer science perspective. Matt Mullenweg did not. He came to WordPress when he was 16 and taught himself programming, and like it, so it sort of, it becomes more of an organic like evolution over time, whereas this is like, no, we're building it from a very structured, and there's pros and cons to both of those approaches, right? Like Drupal, like fundamentally, because it's coming from this computer science background, they're like each version of Drupal up until 8 was like a whole new code base that had to be like important, you know, like, so, and that creates, and that's the reason why there's this like 7 to 8 or 7 to modern Drupal gap, is because each version was just a really big lift. Whereas WordPress, because it began and grew organically, it doesn't have that. It always like tried to be backwards compatible. So I do think that there is something there about like the structure, because if you're approaching things from the way that I guess a computer would work and think about things from the start, it sort of just follows that, oh yeah, a computer could pick up and learn from that and be able to like make assumptions.
Yeah, totally. I think you're spot on with that analysis.
Well, thank you so much, Fons, for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet? Where can they learn more about Webhaven?
I have a personal website, fonsvandam.com. You can go to webhaven.io. You also can get notified there when Webhaven launches. You can find me on LinkedIn. And sometimes I also share some of the stuff I'm working on X. And both, when you type my name, Fons Van Dam, you'll find me. People can always reach out, watch the demo, ask questions. I love to interact about Webhaven or Drupal.
Well, thank you again, Fons, for coming on. Thank everyone who may be watching this or listening to this in the future, and we'll see you on the internet.
Thanks.